WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Poet Tess Gallagher once said that poems have always been her secret church, the place she feels she can hear and reach other people and herself. Her poems have that sense of confession and introspection. Gallagher's new collection, Amplitude, combines new poems with selected ones from three previous volumes. She's also written essays on poetry and a book of short stories. Gallagher lives most of the year in the small seaport town of Port Angeles, Washington, with writer Raymond Carver. Her house is not far from the one she grew up in. Gallagher's father was a longshoreman and a logger. For Gallagher, writing was an escape from the world around her.
I was raised in a household which was quite chaotic. My father was alcoholic, and so that meant that there was a great deal of uncertainty in the household. He was always threatening to leave, and so I think that I began to see language really as a way of at least letting others know my presence and what I wanted in the situation, and of also learning to think about the situation.
You weren't really able to communicate very well with your parents, right?
Not at that point. I think when I began to really seriously write poetry, I did manage to make contact with my father in a way which was very moving to me and to him, I think. I have a poem that was really one of the most satisfying poems I wrote early on that I gave to him, and it kind of did honor to him as a working man. I could read that poem for you.
Yeah, would you read that poem?
Yeah, it's entitled Black Money. His lungs heaving all day in a sulfur mist, then dusk, the lunch pail torn from him before he reaches the house. His children, a cloud of swallows around him. At the stove in the tumbled rooms, the wife, her back the wall he fights most, and she with no weapon but silence and to keep him from the bed. In their sleep, the mill hums and turns at the edge of water. Blue smoke swells the night, and they drift from the graves they have made for each other, float out from the open-mouthed sleep of their children, past banks and businesses, the used car lots, liquor store, the swings in the park. The mill burns on, now a burst of cinders, now whistles screaming down the bay, saws jagged in half-light. Then, like a whip, the sun across the bed, windows high with mountains, and the sleepers fallen to pillows as gulls fall, tilting against their shadows on the log booms. Again the trucks shatter the wood-framed houses, passing to the mill. My father snorts, splashes in the bathroom, throws open our doors to cowboy music. On the radio, hearts are cheating. Somebody is alone. There's blood in Tulsa. Out the backyard, the night shift men rattle the gravel in the alley going home. My father fits goggles to his head. From his pocket, he takes anything metal, the pearl-handled jackknife, a ring of keys, and for us, black money, shoveled from the sulfur pyramids heaped in the distance like yellow gold. Coffee bottle tucked in his armpit, he swaggers past the chicken coop, a pack of cards at his breast. In a fan of light beyond him, the Quino Maru pulls out for Seattle, some black star climbing the deep globe of his eye.
You said that your father was very moved by that poem. Did that convince him that there was more worth in poetry than he might have originally thought?
Oh, I think so. He said, he folded the poem up and he put it in his pocket and he said, I'm going to show that poem to the boys down on the docks, because by that point he was working as a longshoreman. And I just suddenly had a vision of my poems going out to quite a different audience than I had imagined. I had really quite another idea of it and of him in their midst with this very special thing, this poem, which gave him another dimension.
For over a decade now, you've been involved with writer Raymond Carver. And he's a writer from a similar background in a way. You're both from the state of Washington. And I think his father also was an alcoholic. When you and Raymond Carver started being together, how long did it take you till you wrote a poem about him? What I'm thinking is it might be very easy to get self-conscious writing a poem to someone who you love, who is also a writer and can read the poem very critically.
Oh, yes. Well, it took me a long time to answer your question. And I think that that element of not wanting to do it because he might be expecting it or I should write it. I mean, after all, he had dedicated about 5 books to me by the time I finally was able to write the poem. And I had worked up a certain amount of anxiety about, well, this, I'm not very reciprocal, am I?
Is this the poem Bonfire that you're talking about?
Yes.
It's a beautiful poem. I'd love for you to read it.
It was written after a period of my illness and recovery, and had been a serious enough illness that at one point we really feared that I might have cervical cancer. Bonfire for Ray. The inflections of joy, the inflections of suffering, and strangely, sometimes the mixing of the two. It reminds me of opening the huge international butterfly book with over 2,000 species illustrated in color, and among them the giant birdwing butterfly, Ornithoptera victoriae, obtained when John McGilvery, aboard the HMS Rattlesnake, used a shotgun to bring it down somewhere in the Pacific. Other wild petals shattered by use of pronged arrows in New Guinea. And the laughable mechanical butterfly, intended as a decoy, said to be very successful in capturing the flashing blue morpho. So many kinds of crying, so much raw gaiety, variegated with glittering silence. And you, my sudden bouquet, who came to me awkwardly at the head of the stairwell, outside the room that sheltered for so many nights our sleeping and loving, to weep there together. With my death all handsomely in view, all open before us as the sea at night, all tenderly wild in that calm. Safe midnight, your arms strong to hold my face into yours, while the miracle of living raked its silky rapier down our backs. The last time I kissed a man in fear, my first love went to war. But I kissed you anyway, that seal of life, letter sent and received in an instant. Once in Quebec, I drank cognac in the snow, and on a dare, ice skated with my friend's violin. I'd been falling all day, diving into flesh, like a spirit half in, half out of the world. But give me a perishable, fragile beauty that belongs to someone else, and I skate like music, like the wizard of the hopeful. How many times I saved myself on behalf of that borrowed, that shuddering violin. When I handed it back, he played his bonfire of thanksgiving, played a mazurka, then a jig, then something vast and aching, as when love must go on and at the same time perish. I'm talking about memory now, that moment in which the doctor's news flushed us through with dread, and I hadn't swerved back yet into life. Even then, I didn't forget you, violin who threw yourself into my arms, asking not to be broken one more time. It wasn't for music you came to me, but for daring, mine and yours. When they have to, they will write in the book of welcome, two darings, two darlings.
Do you think that writing poetry makes life larger than life?
I think that it certainly does for me. And yet it also helps us honor those aspects of life which seem quite ordinary. And I try not to lose the dimension of the beauty of ordinariness also when I talk about those kinds of subjects in my poems.
Poet Tess Gallagher spoke to us from NPR station WCNY in Syracuse, New York. Her new book of poems, Amplitude, is published by Gray Wolf Press.